And so it's like we can see how that lens, that like colonialist, patriarchal, heteronormative lens, actually rejects
So
so many, so many of us, and so many beautiful parts of ourselves, and
many.
how many parts of ourselves has to had to be exiled or rejected in the name of probably safety, right? And protection. So coming back to your question, it's, you know, it's allowing your sensuality, your expression of who you are in your body, in your own erotic force, to not be right or wrong, but be in relationship with what is true for you.
This is Single and Probably Asexual with Kendra K.
Hello. Welcome back to Single and Probably Asexual. We have another amazing interview episode today. I have a good client slash new friend of mine, Lindsay. And I love this also because we now live in the same city. When you did a photo shoot with me, I was still in the van and I was like little in and out of if I was going to stay here or not. So I'm so excited to be living closer to this amazing woman. We met because she booked me for a kind of branding slash boudoir session. We met up at like one of the most epic locations, will not be disclosed in order to keep it pristine and magical and beautiful. But it was just a magical little morning. It was so much fun. We saw three or four, no, or two herons or something. And then like once you started getting semi-naked, semi-taking clothes off, you were like, oh, I have a tattoo of three herons on my side. And it was kind of just like little like perfection after perfection, happy coincidence after happy coincidence. And it was so much fun. And you were just so much fun to photograph. And it was amazing. And I remember, I think I talked to you that day. I was like in a state of feeling overwhelmed and stressed. And then I thought, oh, but I get to go to Bellingham and I get to go to one of my favorite places in Bellingham. And then, of course, I meet you there. And then we have like the most magical experience photographing ever. And it was so much fun. And I'm just so excited to sit down with you today. And quick little intro for Lindsay. She is a somatic healer slash witch, but I will pass it on over to her now to give herself a proper introduction. And we're gonna talk about some cool things today.
Yay! Oh my goodness. Thank you so much, Kendra, for
Course.
that beautiful introduction. And I felt like I was transported back to our magical portal photo shoot. Like, truly, it was the first time I had met you, and it just felt like all of the ingredients were there for a magical, empowered experience. And yeah, so I'm so grateful that we live within 5 minutes
I
of each
know,
other, which
I
is so
know.
amazing. And yes, so my name for those who are listening is Lindsay Dickus. My pronouns are she and her. And you know, we before we started recording, you were asking, okay, how do you want to be introduced? What how would you describe your work? And I really want to say it's something that I am in ongoing relationship with, because as a multifaceted human being, doing work that doesn't fit neatly within dominant culture, ideas of professional work, it's something that is more fluid for me. So right now, I would say I am a somatic coach, I'm a somatic healer, I am a spiritual mentor, and an earth-centered witch. And those are really the identities that I lead with in my kind of professional world. And right now, they best encompass the work that I do. Also acknowledging that we are all multifaceted beings that don't always fit in a nicely tied up identity.
Yes, I love that. And it's always so
ever changing, especially when you work for yourself. You know, your business can look so different from year to year, from decade to decade, and you have new titles, you adapt new things into your life, into your work with your clients, and it's beautiful to have this like flow and like having it feel right for you, and then saying, actually, now I kind of like identify this way within my career and who I am and who I support via my clientele.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll share, I think, a really important piece of my story in owning my own business and doing healing work is that I really started off as a social worker. I have my licensed clinical social work license. I'm a somatic psychotherapist as well. And so my healing journey has really evolved from this very dominant culture, understandable profession. But it was limiting for me. And so when you were speaking about like this flow and this continual evolution of who we are and what different parts of us we allow to be expressed and seen, that's been a really big part of my journey into now how I am showing up as a witch, as a healer, in my intuitive abilities. And I feel like that can only benefit, you know, myself and the people I work with.
So you used to be a somatic psychologist. And can you define...
Psychotherapist.
And can you define for me somatic?
Yes. Yeah. Great question.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that the word somatic is becoming more and more popularized. I think more folks are orienting to, okay, understanding somatic therapy, understanding somatic coaching, but there is still an ambiguity to it. Mm. And so I'll share my experience with it, how I understand it.
Yes.
So understanding a somatic based healing approach is really coming into relationship with the felt sense of your body, right? The sensational experiences in your body, the sensational experiences that emerge moment to moment, the sensational experiences that emerge around a particular situation or relationship, memory, right? Different experiences that we have across our lifetime and lifetimes.
Whoa.
So that's really a kind of a condensed version of how I would understand somatic.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, it's being in relationship with your body and with the felt sense experience of your body.
Wow. Okay, that's really cool because I didn't know like the either technical definition of it, but that's really cool because I mean we're always going to be in different periods of life, and it sounds like what you do is coach people through the ebbs and flows of life, and you know when you feel down this is what you're going to want to do for your you know specific being, and when you're up this is what you're going to want to do, or you know I don't however you guide and you know help your clients like life is not linear and your feelings are not linear. Your body is not linear. You know, you're going to have different, like we were just talking about this, like our bodies are like, oh, you need to stop doing this or you need to do more of this and listening to the body too.
Yeah.
Do you find it as like an earthbound witch that body is very important in your like, in your work and listening to that and like intuitively listening to your body?
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we are, we've inherited generational patterns of protection and safety, and that has been passed down and that lives within our bodies.
Yeah.
And so coming into relationship with the felt sense of our body, it's really about coming into curious, compassionate relationship for how our lineages, how our the generations before us have had to shut down or repress or reject or exile parts or expressions of our bodies in order to stay safe and in order to stay protected. And so as an earth witch, you know, we are earthbound bodies. We are our nature is the natural world. Yes. And so when we start to come into the felt sense experience of our bodies and those layers of, you know, shame or rejection or exile, if we can ground and orient our experience as, I am part of the natural world. Mm-hmm. The earth is holding me in this experience. It gives us a resource to be held mm-hmm. as we start to peel back all of those pieces of conditioning and those layers that have at one point either served us or served our ancestors in being safe and protected. Mm-hmm. But actually now we have an opportunity to rewrite that story in our bodies.
Right.
And if we are able to orient to the natural world, that is such a powerful resource for another way of being.
Right.
And we live in such a beautiful part of the world.
Especially like where we're at in this state too. And like, it's also just the lack of people here too, which I feel makes the nature out here that much better. It feels more clean and fuller because we're not heavy, condensed Seattle metropolis area. Yeah. We're kind of like, we're so close to the border. We're practically Canadian.
Oh, I love that. I love that reflection. Yes. There's more spaciousness. And I think there's more spaciousness to be with the more than human world.
Yeah.
And, you know, that includes the trees, the herons, you know, the water, the soil, the mountains. And what a beautiful gift that is to have those relationships.
Right. That was also just reminding me of your session because it was just perfection after perfection because I remember we started out at the water and then we made our way up that hill to the trees and right at that moment that we got up to the trees, the sun started peeking through and it was just like the, you know, everything was happening for our, you know, for us that day, that morning. And it was just so fun. But that, nature here is just, in Bellingham specifically, I just feel so much more like I want to just be out here more than I was in like Seattle and North Seattle. It's just too, it was too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I, as you're saying that, I so appreciate it because it makes me think of this co-creative process that we can be in with the natural world.
Yeah.
You know, I think if we have been understandably disconnected from our bodies, you know, from our own life history, from our own trauma, from our own intergenerational trauma, whatever the case may be, for us to be in relationship, co-creative relationship with the outside world, it can really help us tap in to those layers beneath that we have disconnected or haven't been able to access.
Yeah.
And so just feeling the warmth, like you said, like the warmth of the, you know, the sun came out.
That came out, yeah.
You know, and our bodies respond
to
that. Our bodies respond, like our skin like feels that warmth and that physiological response of being like met and seen and received by the sun. It helps us access a part of ourselves that maybe we're not familiar with or we haven't felt safe enough to express or explore. And that's, I mean, that's why I so love your work. And you know, when we were going back and forth, it's like, should we do an inside shoot? Should we do an outside? And it's like, outside like clearly. Yeah. And so that was such a beautiful way that we, I felt like we were just in relationship with the natural world.
And it was, we were in an area that was so private. We didn't see a single soul. It was literally perfect.
It was
my last session there and I was actually supposed to do another session there recently. And my client and I were just waltzing up and it was like, oh, this area is closed for reconstruction. I was like, darn. But we found another spot to go to. It was perfect at all. Yeah. Exactly. You know, everything happened divinely and perfectly, but it's such a special spot.
It's so special.
So Lindsay initially reached out to me wanting to be a part of this podcast because she wanted to talk about sensuality and sexuality, especially with what you do and then within the queer lens, which I'm really excited to talk about. So my first question for you, actually, we just did that. Let me go here and then I'm going to go here. So for you, what is a perfect definition of sensuality from the queer perspective?
Oh, I love this question.
And then the next question goes into this too. I'll say it in a second, but I want to hear what you think sensuality is.
Yeah.
From the queer lens.
Yes. Oh, okay. I love this question. So I'm even just as you're asking me this, I'm like feeling myself drop into my body. I'm feeling my hand like move from my heart down to my belly.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is like, that's queerness. That's part of being in your queer sensuality. It's like really orienting to the wisdom of your own body.
Right.
You know, I think so much of sensuality is being able to be in relationship with your sensual experiences, mm-hmm. right? Your senses.
Yes.
And from a queer lens, it's owning that which is true for you in your own lived experience, not what dominant culture is telling you how you should feel or how you should be experiencing this kind of relationship or how you should be experiencing this kind of situation or how you should be or act or perform or do across contexts and environments. I truly feel like it's a reclamation of your own sensual experience in your body through your own senses, and it gets to be yours.
Yeah.
It's no one else's.
Right, right. And that's also like the beautiful thing about queerness and being queer. It's because we're living this life that feels aligned to us, but it's also in opposition of everything that we have been taught and like how to live in everything. So my next question is, for you, how has being queer factored into what you do in, like, so maybe we can even, like, align this with, because, you know, there's also other healers out there, too, but they don't have the perspective from the queer lens. Yeah. They have the heteronormative perspective.
Yes. Yeah.
And so how has what you do and being queer, how is that in opposition of maybe some other healing ways, but coming from the heteronormative lens versus the queer lens, which is more focused, not like focused, but more in tune with like who you are and not just like, oh, well, we have to do this because society has told us we have to do this and heteronormative, you know, tendencies told us that we have to do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a juicy question.
I figured we'd probably talk about this one for a minute.
Yes. Yes. Well, so first off, I want to really say that that there is no right or wrong way to be queer.
Right.
And I think that is always the kind of guiding, like my North Star when I orient to my experience as a queer person. And it's something that I've been, a brief side note, part of my career was going into high schools and leading LGBTQIA+ support groups weekly. The number one piece that always came through in those groups is there's no right or wrong way to be queer or gay or lesbian. You know, like there's no right or wrong way. And to me, that's so permission giving, which is in direct opposition to cis heteronormative ways of being.
Yeah.
Capitalist, colonial, patriarchal ways of being.
Yeah. The list goes on.
The list goes on.
And then talk about like ancestral too. It was heteronormative. Even if we had queer ancestors, they had to assimilate to the heteronormative world. It's like how we have forced people of color to assimilate to being white.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 And so it's like we can see how that lens, that like colonialist, patriarchal heteronormative lens actually rejects so many of us and so many beautiful parts of ourselves.
Yeah.
And how many parts of ourselves had to be exiled or rejected in the name of probably safety, right? And protection.
Yes.
So coming back to your question, it's allowing your sensuality, your expression of who you are in your body and your own erotic force to not be right or wrong, but be in relationship with what is true for you.
Yeah.
And it's a practice. It's a practice. It's like earning. I do a lot of attachment work with my clients. It's around, so much of it is earning the secure attachment with these parts of ourselves that we have had to reject or exile under a cis heteronormative system.
Yeah.
And so by weaving in queerness, we weave in this spectrum of expression through our bodies, through movement, through sound, through feelings that, you know, like, is it actually okay for me to feel this way? Yes.
Right.
You know, yes. Like, yeah. It is okay. You can feel your rage. You can feel your pleasure.
Yes.
You can feel your joy. And I think that is such a unique aspect of really integrating queerness into sensuality and sexuality and somatic work,
mm-hmm.
is that there's room for it all, because all expressions of ourselves, all parts of ourselves, are divine.
Mm-hmm.
They're all expressions of our own divinity and our own nature.
Yeah.
And even the parts that are messy or weird or numb, like, all of those parts have wisdom and value.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. And they're also just, you know, we are always learning, and the messiness of it and the mistakes that we make, they're vital to get us to where we are.
Yes.
Like, there was Leslie Jones, she was on SNL, you know.
Love her.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think so she was on, like, one of the Jimmys, the Night shows, and she was talking about, you know, people coming into their careers like at an older age, and she was talking about how Harrison Ford was a carpenter at 30, and Vera Wang didn't design her first dress until she was like 42.
That's so inspiring.
Yes. And then she said something like, and Oprah got fired when she was 23, and I think it was Jimmy Kimmel, and he was like, God, who would fire Oprah? And I was like, she was 23. She needed to be fired in order to be Oprah today.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
That just goes into like also the colonial, heteronormative, cisgendered fear of you can't mess up.
Yes.
Because things have to be done a certain way. And it's like, well, how are you ever going to learn?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think about coming into relationship with that perfectionist part of ourselves, right? That part that can't mess up, that has to get it right.
Right.
And
yeah.
By seeing that that's actually been a conditioning that has, you know, attempted to keep us safe or protected, because probably at some point in our lives or in lives of our ancestors, you could be hurt or killed.
Exactly. It was a safety thing. Like you said, it was a safety thing. And
yeah.
I hate thinking about my ancestors and those who came before me, and just how many, especially women, they either had to just put up with what was happening to them. They had to put out. They had to do all of these things because back then it was like life or death.
Yeah. Yes.
And it still kind of is today. I mean, I worry about walking in certain areas by myself at night, and I'm always hypervigilant, just being a woman alone.
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's something so much to be said for that, because, you know, I think that, you know, women and people directly impacted by misogyny, we're all having different experiences across the globe and different cultures. And I think that, you know, for us in North America, in general, there are spaces that are becoming safer for us to be more in our sensual, sexual, full range, full emotional range yes. of who we are. And yet we can leave a space and walk down the street and instantly know that's not safe. It's right. not safe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there, you know, we're walking this path of how do we hold this divinity of expression within ourselves mm-hmm. and still acknowledge that there are still systems that they are crumbling, but they're still present and they're still yeah. like, you know, holding on
yeah.
to this way of being that right. would rather see us not
yeah.
be in our full range of expression.
Right. And you had mentioned earlier that you do a lot of attachment work with your clients yeah. because yeah. it's like the unconditioning that we need to be learning in order to tap more into ourselves and
yes.
Align more with our queerness if you are queer. And it's, I can imagine that's probably hard work to do with your clients because we're yeah. almost so rigid in what we feel to be true or maybe mm-hmm. not necessarily feel to be true, but what mm-hmm. we have been conditionally doing our whole lives, what mm-hmm. our mothers and our grandmothers and our fathers and our siblings and our cousins do. And
yes.
I can imagine that attachment work is, it's so necessary, but it's probably a lot
right.
unconditioning and
yes.
unlearning
yes.
and getting back to the place where
yeah.
we're, you know, whole and healing and connecting with nature.
100% yes. It is. It's very much intergenerational
yeah.
work. And something I also want to say is that's why I think it is so important to work from an intersectional lens too, because
yes.
anytime, you know, it's like this, it seems like such a theme for what's coming through today is this intergenerational patterning, these intergenerational conditionings. For us as women and people directly impacted by misogyny, but also understanding that as white-bodied people, we also have a different relationship to intergenerational healing too.
Right.
And so this, you know, when I first like kind of started to pull the thread of attachment, I felt an experience of connection and belonging, that felt sense in my body that I hadn't had access to before because dominant culture hadn't allowed me to have that
right.
experience. And I realized the more I started tugging on that thread, you see that the thread is connected into the greater web of life.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to understand that as a woman and also somebody who has greater proximity to power and privilege as a white-bodied person, that I have a different relationship with ancestral and intergenerational healing than somebody who is in a body of culture, which is what Resma Menakem would describe people of color and okay. Black and Indigenous people of
yeah.
color.
I like that.
Yes. And I'll also say, this is not my knowledge or wisdom. This is what I have learned from
right.
from my teachers, from Dr. Rosales Mesa
yeah.
is somebody that, and maybe we can put this in the show notes, but she has been a tremendous teacher in helping me align to my own intergenerational healing, working with my well and healed ancestors as a white-bodied
yeah.
person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to make some notes here. So, yeah.
yeah.
I think you're right. There's a theme
yeah.
of ancestral
yeah.
trauma in that. And I think we're going to talk more about that. But
yes.
how did you get to this today? How did you become your own? I know you said you were a somatic...
Psychotherapist.
Yes. So it just kind of almost
yeah.
naturally led you. And then, of course, I am guessing that you leaned personally more into... what made you feel good, which is the earth, and then thinking, okay, well, these are practices that I can learn from and also teach others. So how did like queer somatic coach Lindsay get to this point, especially
yeah.
from, I mean, you can talk as early as childhood or just
yeah.
post maybe a corporate-ish kind of lifestyle
yes.
to your own entrepreneurial coaching
yes.
business.
Yeah. I love this question. Yeah, so I think that the place that I'm kind of getting the nudge to start is I went to social work school. I have my master's in social work. And I also have a background as a yoga and meditation teacher. And so being in service to others, really acknowledging systems of oppression and misappropriation of resources was always something that was really important for me, like having that social justice lens.
Yeah.
But also really love to bring in spirituality and our bodies. And I was trying to weave in, you know, this spirituality and this connection with our bodies into different social work jobs that I had. I worked at a drug addiction treatment center. I worked in domestic violence, sexual violence, nonprofit world. Basically, I was in the mental health nonprofit industrial complex for quite a long time. And it served me because it was an access point for me that was available where I was able to show up and be of service.
Yeah.
And then I transitioned into private practice. And that's really where I started to feel a greater expression of my own creativity and my own power as a healer. Mm-hmm. Because I was given my own self-responsibility now, right? Like I got to run my own business and my healing practice in the way that I wanted.
Wanted to, yeah.
Because for so long, I was in psychotherapeutic agencies that was very heady,
right?
Very top down. And not that there's not value in that, but it was very colonial, very heady, and it literally did not make sense to me.
Right.
I would go home at night and just be like, why does this not make sense? And it's
like healthcare workers. They get into healthcare because they're like, I want to help people, and then they're like, wait. What are we doing?
Why am I
working in a hospital right now? This is terrible. Like all of these practices and pushing big pharma medication on people.
Yes.
So funny you made that connection within your own.
Yeah. Thank you for naming that.
Yeah.
And so it actually like made me really curious. I was like, why am I feeling so confused? Why is this not landing for me?
Yeah.
And so I really got a huge nudge from spirit to open my private practice. And I didn't know why, but I can explain it as I had this experience in my body that I was literally being moved forward. Wow. Like I could feel it in my body.
Yeah.
And I had enough trust in my body at that time to follow it. Mm-hmm. And so then when I stepped into my own private practice, I had more freedom of creativity and expression, and I could start to drop in to the wisdom of our bodies and the wisdom of the felt sense of our bodies to create true healing and true liberation in our own expression in our bodies.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that lasted a few years, and I still have my private practice. A couple years ago, I moved here to Bellingham during the pandemic. Again, I moved here on an intuitive nudge. My body told me, you know,
and it was, I remember you saying that on your session, it was specifically Bellingham too. It was like Washington, but Bellingham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'd actually never been to Bellingham. I did very little research before I moved here. But I knew that the land was calling
you. Yeah. I mean, that's all the research you need,
you know? Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's trustable.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the other piece, too, and part of that, like, breaking up with, you know, a very colonialist, patriarchal way of healing is that, you know, you don't always have to have it all figured out in your head.
Right.
You don't always have to think everything through. Like, there are other ways to receive information.
Intuitively. But we have a hard time in listening to our intuition.
Yes.
Because, it's by the book. We got to do X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
It's like, what about how you're feeling?
Yes.
Are you being called to a place? Are you being drawn to this client? Are you being drawn to this project?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's so powerful in that reclamation of, oh, there are other ways for knowing.
Yeah.
There are other ways of receiving information.
Right.
And so it was a big nod to my like self-trust by moving here on that intuitive bodily wisdom and knowing.
Yeah.
And I think helped unlock the confidence and courage in me to actually say, I'm not just a psychotherapist. I'm not just a social worker. I'm actually a woman of medicine. I'm a witch.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a priestess. I'm a space holder. And that's been a really big reclamation for me. And so that's been my path. And I have found that, you know, really anchoring into the expression and identity as an earth witch, it's a nod to the earth as my muse and my guide and my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Because truly, this land called to me because it was whispering knowledge and information and messages that I needed to hear and receive in order to expand from this conditioned way of being in my head.
Uh-huh.
You know, like put on the cardigan and the like business casual.
The lanyard
and
your name.
Yes. And be a blank slate.
Mm-hmm.
Be a blank slate. Mm-hmm. Disconnect from my body's needs. Disconnect from, you know, the felt sense of my body if something didn't feel right. Push through. And that to me is like, that's such a healing process. And that's a big part of what I guide my clients in is knowing that at one point in time, being put together, leading from your head, you know, dressing and acting in a way to fit in, that probably protected you and kept you safe and paid your bills.
Right.
And, you know, like there's no shame in that because it has protected you.
Right. And it was also taught to most of us
until
we get to adulthood and we delve into other things that, spark our curiosity and everything. It's like taught.
Yes. Yes.
It's what our parents knew. It's what our grandparents knew. It's what our ancestors knew.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love that you said, you know, it's what we're taught. And I think that's why it's so important to bring in mentors or resources that can show us another way.
Yeah.
You know, for me, like the earth, mentor, muse, guide, the earth is showing me this land, the trees, showing me another way of being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the coaches and the mentors that I've hired, they're showing me a new way of being.
Yeah.
You know, so when I work with my clients, it's like, what's another way of being that can actually start to feel safe in your body, in your nervous system, and having a felt sense attachment, like safe, secure attachment with this new way of being in our bodies that aren't, you know, layered with the conditioning before of what we grew up with, of what we were taught in childhood and
of what
so
this
on.
World shows us, the colonial mindset that we all have we're trying to break through, a lot of us.
It's the air we breathe, the water we swim through.
Oh, wow. So coming here really kind of like set you off into feeling confidence moving forward with taking what you've already known and learned and like integrating it in a way that felt more comfortable and beneficial for you and then also to other people.
Yes.
So Bellingham was like your jumping off point
for
yourself and your own business.
Truly.
Yeah.
Truly. And I want to say it's not necessarily Bellingham the city, but the land.
The land.
You know, and also really wanting to acknowledge, you know, that I am a white-bodied settler. You know, I'm a fifth-generation Alsatian settler. Majority of my family, my mother's and my father's line are from Alsace. And so I also recognize that this is not my land.
Right.
And also just having like that humble acknowledgement, but also just being an ongoing relationship with what does it mean for me as a white bodied person who is actively benefiting and being supported on land that is not mine. And I don't have the answers. I don't want to claim to have the answers, but I do think there's something potent in recognizing that and acknowledging that as a really important piece in my own liberation and expansion too.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you said that you were learning a lot from your other coach and mentor, what are some of, because like you and I are, we are white, what are some of the ways that you have learned to heal ancestral trauma from the white lens? Because like you said, it's very different because the trauma is vastly different. There is way more trauma for the indigenous, for people of color, for Black Americans. And I never thought of that until now. I mean, we all have our own ancestral trauma, but of course the trauma for others that are not white, you know, are not made for this world or how this world was built to prosper under whiteness.
Right.
What are some ways that like I and people who are also listening who are white, how can we tap into healing our own generational trauma?
I mean,
in that way, in a way that's like,
it's such, that's such a rich, complex question. And I just want to preface that I'm not the expert here and that I can only speak from my experience and also my own location on that journey.
Right.
So for me, I mean, number one, it has been coming into relationship with my body. Because when I'm in relationship with my body and my felt sense experience and my emotions, I'm better able to have personal agency, personal power, and self-responsibility. And that is such a practice of like our own sovereignty so that we're not dumping our experience on other people, particularly people of color or people who deviate from the dominant culture norm. So there's that self-responsibility that I just believe comes with practice, with curious, compassionate presence. And I think that is such a gift for all involved because this is, I mean, this intergenerational trauma, it's different for all of us, but especially for white-bodied folks. You know, again, I'm not the expert, but I know from my own experience that we have a lot of reckoning to do. In our own lifetimes and from our own ancestors and our own intergenerational healing. There's a lot of reckoning. And so there can be a lot of emotions that come up. Guilt, shame, grief.
It's like, why should you heal your ancestral trauma when your ancestors were also responsible for the harm against people of color?
Right.
Then and today.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So even having like this radical acceptance and compassion for like, okay, this is how it is. This is how in my own life experience I'm born into this, right? And having that, there's an acceptance of that responsibility and then there's that compassionate practice. And again, I really want to note my teacher, Dr. Rocio Rosales Mesa. I'm sure, again, we're going to add her in the notes
for sure.
You know, she has truly been such a beautiful and potent spiritual mentor on the decolonial path. And so what I can also speak to as well is when I'm holding space for my clients, especially if I'm holding space for healing these intergenerational wounds that are being woven into an intersectional lens. My clients are white-bodied. It's really helping them cultivate that presence and that compassionate curiosity with all parts of themselves.
Yeah.
So that there can be that ability to stay with yourself and be able to ground and resource when the grief inevitably comes up, when the shame inevitably comes up, when the messy and the numbness, right? When it all comes up, that's our responsibility. And then we work with and we pay teachers and leaders of the field in the field of anti-racism, decolonial work. But that way we're showing up in our own responsibility in order to receive the teachings,
right?
So that we can be self-responsible, we can be sovereign without leaking or dumping or on other people. And there's so much power that's accessed within that for ourselves.
Right.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm loving that we're in this day and age now where, like, I think I mentioned this on one of my last podcasts, I'm in a space of only wanting to learn from women of color, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, for learning everything that I have ever known my entire life, mentors, guiders as well, from white-bodied lens and perspective, it's like, well, I'm kind of done learning that. Like, it's harmful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even some of these practices that we do, if there's not recognition from the white teacher or the person who is, you know, teaching or talking, it's like, there's a lot of...
Yeah. Yeah, they have to be able to name and recognize and be in right relationship with their own proximity to power and privilege.
Right.
Because otherwise, there's a huge shadowy aspect of those teachings that
it's just
is really ugly.
And it just becomes more harmful teaching. It's like, well, I don't want to learn from this. I'd rather find the woman of color who's doing this and, or, you know, just reading books, listening to podcasts. Like, I'm just very, like, I'm in a space of, like, I'm learning from especially women of color right now
that.
Because our entire lives, I mean, I'm assuming for you as well, is, you know, even throughout school, we're learning about the white past and this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Trust that nudge.
Yes,
I completely agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So let's get into a little bit. I mean, I feel like we're gonna come back to this because it has been predominant in our conversation so far, which I love because I think our duty, especially as white women, is, I mean, it's our duty to learn about the oppressed.
Yeah.
And it's our duty to make sure that we are leading a life moving forward that is inclusive of everybody and unlearning all the things that we were taught in the past from either predominantly white public schools, white family members, white presidents, white everything.
Yes, religions, institutions, it's insidious.
Company, big companies owned by white CEO men and how, it's, so it's like, I feel like our duty is to, we have to learn this and help at least change a little bit. Obviously, we can't speak on the perspective because we don't know, but we have to dive into it to understand and know. And so
and that's a liberatory practice, like that own self responsibility is in right relationship to liberation and our own healing. And you know, it's so interesting, like this story just wants to come through. You know, I've been thinking about you know, healing intergenerational trauma, and I had an experience a while ago where I came into relationship with an unhealed ancestor, a maternal ancestor, and the experience that I had was in my body. I felt like I was being told this message to close my legs, close your legs, tighten your thighs, like close off access to your pussy, to your area of pleasure, and keep yourself tight and small and closed in. Wow. And it was a really powerful experience because I could feel it in my body.
Wow.
And this is just like two generations removed from me. But it was really an experience of, this is shame. This is this is sexual, this is sensual, this is pleasure, shame. And that's not too far down my lineage. Like, like I'm not too far off from that.
Right.
And the reason I think this came up just from what you were saying is that we have that self-responsibility, but we also have to be in right relationship to learn. But there's also so much from learning from being in pleasure and being in our own joy and what feels good.
Yes.
And Adrienne Marie Brown has an amazing book called Pleasure Activism. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar, but,
no.
but you know, you or the listeners, like, it is such a powerful, powerful book. Queer woman of color, like just black woman. I mean, it just, it's so potent. And so really, you know, learning from her and teachers who are centering pleasure in our liberatory practice, that's also important for all bodies. Of course, understanding like my own proximity to power and privilege as a white bodied person, but also knowing like, wow, like even just two generations before me, my women ancestors, it was not safe to even have that experience of opening your legs, of like being free, like of being able to widen and expand,
taking up that
take up space,
like, dressing how you like.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean, it was just so powerful. It was like this, like zippered up. We're gonna stay close. You're gonna clench your legs. You're gonna clench your knees. We're not gonna give you any access to your lower energy centers or your pleasure centers. And how just like coming into relationship with that is like how powerful it is. Just to like, what is it like to widen your knees, widen your legs,
right?
Widen your arms, take up space side to side,
right?
So that and so coming into relationship with the way that our pleasure has been stifled, our sensual expression, our sexual expression has been stifled,
especially
really
just as women, and it's also it's fear based too. Yeah. Even today, I mean, it's like, no, I can't open myself up because there's a good chance I could be raped or assaulted.
Yeah. Catcalled.
Every other day, I swear to God. 100%. Like 2 days ago for me, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I actually had this thought. I was like, if I was walking alongside of a man right there, like in that moment when I was walking my dog, that wouldn't have happened. And it's just.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Something came up for me there. Do you mind talking about that experience? How did you access that ancestor who made you feel this is what she was communicating to? Do you do that via meditation? I mean, you are a very experienced witch and intuitive person.
Yeah.
But I've always wanted to, I guess, for, you know, and of course it's like, it'll happen when it happens. And once you further your practices and stuff like that, things will start to come. But if you could, if you don't mind, which I would love to hear about what that experience was like. Were you in meditation? Were you with a counselor or a mentor? Yes. I would love, love to know.
Yes. Such a good question. Well, first I'll just preface, I do not recommend actively seeking out or reaching out to unhealed or unwell ancestors.
That's right, because you did say it was an unhealed ancestor.
Yes.
So but was that your intention at first, or did she just come through?
Yeah. So I, to be honest, I can't quite remember. I don't believe it was my intention.
Fair.
I believe this was right around Samhain. So right around what we know as Halloween in the fall months. And I had been in practice of just coming into reverence to my ancestors that, like, are close ancestors, right?
Right.
Two, three, four generations back.
Right.
Really, what I've learned is our well and healed ancestors go way, way, way back, like pre-colonial times.
Right.
You know, so that's, I think, an important distinction.
Yeah.
But I think what was so important for me in that experience was I was coming into relationship with my own body and that experience. And for whatever reason, my intention, you know, I whenever I want to go into like a meditation or a trance, or I want to receive
something, yeah,
something, a message, yes, information from the unseen world.
Or your higher self.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I first ground,
yeah,
you know, ground into my body, and then close my eyes and make the intention to receive this information. What is information to an inquiry what am I actually seeking information from?
Getting really clear on
getting really clear.
Yes.
And it can even be like a really general question.
Right.
But in this experience, I think I had a general inquiry. And because I had been in this reverent practice of just acknowledging my ancestors 1, 2, 3, 4 generations back, she came through.
Wow.
And when I say she came through, we all have different ways of experiencing the more than human world. So some people see their guides, see their, you know, people who have passed, and
yes,
people see, you know, hear them.
Right.
You can smell them. For me, I felt her in my body.
Wow.
And I knew it because I was like, this is not how I feel in my body.
Normally.
And so, exactly. And so that's why it's a really important, so much of what I do in work with clients is like, what are you noticing in your body?
Yes.
Now, what is yours? When you are,
yes,
grounded, when you are in a safe, secure space, and in that practice of being in a relationship with your body, you get to know,
yes,
your body. You get to know what's familiar and what's unfamiliar.
And listening to that intuition and knowing that knowing. Because like, yeah, you,
yes,
said this, like, this isn't comfortable. This isn't normal,
yes,
that I don't feel this. So this,
yes,
is something coming through.
Yes.
And I'm letting my intuition lead me there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So when we have this kind of secure relationship with our body and our felt sense, we have a baseline.
Right.
Right? We have a baseline for our experience. So then when we intentionally, you know, journey to meet guides or, you know, ancestors or people who have passed, when we, you know, step outside of our house and we're interacting with people and we have a sensational experience in our body that's unfamiliar or that is even piquing our interest, like, oh, okay, that's giving us information,
yes,
right? That it's like, oh, this isn't my baseline, so let's get curious. What is this?
Right.
And in that moment, this, I was like, this isn't mine.
Yeah.
This isn't my embodied experience, lived experience in my body. And I felt very much transported back to when women had to be buttoned up.
Yes.
Keep it together. You know, don't mess up.
Right.
Keep, you know, keep your legs closed. Keep, you know, keep your jaw taut. The, like, don't express.
Long garments, layers and layers.
Yes.
No skin showing.
No, like, very closed, protect, you know, and,
yeah,
and from a nervous system embodiment perspective, that's a very protective stance. So it,
right,
makes sense. And so I think for me, being able to receive that information from her, receive that experience in my body, is due to the practice that I already have in the relationship that,
right,
I have with my intuition and my body,
right,
so that I could receive that and actually begin to heal that.
Yeah.
Right? Because that lives in my body. We understand, like, epigenetics, like, her experience lives in my body, like that, like the Russian dolls.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
You know, like, our ancestors live in,
yeah,
our bodies, and so for me, it was like evoking her experience in my body.
Right.
And then from there, I took that information of, okay, you know, it's not safe to open your legs. It's not,
right,
safe to widen your body side to side. It's not safe to relax.
Right.
It's not safe to open your heart and feel like joy and ecstatic pleasure,
yeah,
you know, from your center.
Yeah.
Like, that's not safe. And so that was really important information for me to, like, now where can I find spaces where it's safe enough for me to start to dose my embodied experience,
right,
of widening my legs.
Yeah. and healing that ancestor and that part of her that you said is also living within you. And I don't, you said you didn't intentionally call her in, but she came in for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And the important piece that I want to name here is that I didn't heal it for her.
Right.
I healed it for me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a really important piece when we do, when we're doing this intergenerational trauma work, is that ultimately we need to have our own boundaries.
Right.
Right. And sovereignty, and knowing that what I heal in myself is like, will have that ripple effect, but it's not, I'm going into this meditation to heal, you know, my grandmother's, you know, undiagnosed schizophrenia and, you know, sexual trauma, even if that may be the case. And it's, you know, honoring that experience and all the emotions that come up with it, but ultimately realizing this is the body, this is the vessel that is mine, and that I actually have full self-responsibility and full self-sovereignty over. And it's a really empowering gift when you can give yourself that, and knowing that when you're healing your experience, it has that ripple effect.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And I didn't even think that's something that I've just learned now is because, you know, when you think like ancestral trauma and healing that, it that makes sense though. It just, it starts with you and like knowing that, the generations before us, they live within us. You know, like if we have such, like, deep connection with a parent, maybe not even like a connection, but there's a lot of similarities between how you, like your father or your mother were, and it's because they're the closest to you. And there is so much that like of me that like I see my dad in me and I see my mom in me. And so thinking about all these people who have also come before us, like even my grandparents and their parents and their grandparents, it's, I never thought of it as like I was a container for like all of them, and the healing of the ancestral trauma is just, it starts with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's so good. And it can feel like, even as you're saying that, it's like, it can feel like such a reclamation of our own agency and our own power.
Yeah.
And that's like, it's such a gift for ourselves, and it's such a gift for those around us.
Yes.
Right. Because when we start to come into that practice with ourselves, you know, we're not perfect. We're human beings for a reason.
Yeah.
Right. But if we can come into that practice for ourselves, whether it's explicit or not, we invite other people or those around us into that same practice of coming back into their own self.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people can accept the invitation or not. Or not. You know? But we can create that opportunity just by being in our presence.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really, that's very, like, transformational, powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but it's so hard to even think of, I guess not difficult, but I mean, for those who are, we're so conditioned to be a certain way, think a certain way. It's like this expansion that we all have and can have access to, but, you know, life tells us to do one thing, or the emotions say, oh no, that's scary emotion. You know, like we don't want to go there. And it's so, we're so vast.
Yes.
So vast.
Yes. 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 And when we can anchor into that vastness, it really helps to anchor us through life circumstances or different parts of us that don't feel safe, that feel afraid. Like, all of that is welcome.
Right.
And, like, that sacred remembrance of our own essence, our own vastness, our own agency within, it's truly transformational. And and that's so much of the work that I do with clients, and I do it through our bodies, like, because truly, like, our bodies are the vessel.
It's the root, it's the end, it's the beginning, it's everything. Wow. So when it comes, so this, let's talk a little bit about sensuality and sexuality, especially for, like, so for someone like me who's, like, single and asexual, I don't feel a lot of, you know, sex drive and romantic feelings like that. What are some ways that, like, for if there's other listeners out there who are single, they like to be single, or they don't have the typical, what, like, one of my last couple episodes I did with myself was the compulsory sexuality, that we all feel the same way about sex, which is not the case.
Absolutely.
So how can, like, someone who is maybe, like, predominantly asexual, how can they tap into their own sensuality that, like, is comfortable for them? Because mm-hmm. it's, again, it's not the traditional, it's not the heteronormative colonial sexuality that we've been taught, like, this is what you need to feel, this is how you should feel, this is who you're supposed to be with. So for so for someone who's, like, asexual, it's like, wait, can I even tap into this? And what does that look like for me, sort of thing? And you probably have a lot of knowledge just coming from the queer-based lens as well on that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I love this question. You know, the first thing that came to mind was curiosity. Really, I mean, like, I just even feel my body, like, soften with that. You know, it's just like coming into curious relationship with your own lived experience. I think there's so much power in meeting and greeting our sensational experience, including not feeling anything, feeling numb, feeling disconnected, feeling something other than what is being told we quote unquote should. But being able to meet and greet all of your experience with curiosity and with a loving, compassionate presence. It is, it sounds so simple. But it is so powerful. And it's truly been the catalyst for me to embrace myself as a queer person. As a person who is attracted to all genders and all sexual expressions. And it's helped me to really understand and come into a place of acceptance and feel more power and more agency. So there's a lot I that feels like the most potent piece I want to share is, like, meeting and greeting, you know, your experience with presence, with curiosity, with loving compassion. And being in that practice, right? Because that is something that we have to learn. You know, not all of us grew up in families or households where our parents or our primary caregivers were attuned or had the resources to attune to us, right? And loving compassion. I mean, I'm just like,
Like, there's trauma.
So much. Yes, I mean, exactly. And so, you know, we're just coming into this practice of, you know, some people say, like, reparenting ourselves, or, you know, but welcoming it all, that the numbness or the deviation from the norm, like, that is welcome too. That's fucking welcome. And it's beautiful and it's needed.
And this is interesting too, because I've seen and heard a lot of people that self-expression, even because, like, you have a partner who's a man, cisgendered man, but having that self-expression is still important. It's not just like, okay, well, we are seemingly a straight couple, but there is also many other facets to who I am, and just because I am with someone who is of the opposite gender, who the world is like, yes, this is what you should be doing. It doesn't mean, like, I have to squander or squash all of these feelings. Because I remember there was this this person who, they got married to their husband. It was a woman who got married to a man. And then, like, a couple years later, she came out as bi. And I think, I don't know if I saw a couple comments, and it was like, oh, well, what's the point of this if you're already married? It's like, well, this is who I am.
This and it is who I am. It doesn't matter.
And, like you said, being queer, there's no rules, and there's no, you're not queer enough. It's like, I'm queer, and I'm with the guy. And that's okay.
Thank you so much. I love this question, and I was hoping we'd get into this, because I had been on and off single for about 7 or 8 years before I met my partner. And it's magical. I met him, like, shortly after I moved to Bellingham. And you know, I'm going to honor, you know, the privacy of our own love story and our, you know, how our paths met. But it really has been, an interesting exploration of my own queerness and my own expression of queerness now in a cishet presenting relationship. And I think that coming into the practice of being in relationship with my queerness, being an ongoing, curious, compassionate presence with it has been such an anchoring resource. And so that's what I would really also just share with practitioners too, is that, or practitioners, with listeners, that, you know, part of being queer and not being cis heteronormative is that your expression, your sexual expression, your sexual identity, it gets to be fluid. It gets to be evolving. It doesn't, like, we've been fed the message that it's stagnant. You know, you're straight. You're cis. Like,
you're in
this
a relationship
who you are.
With the opposite gender, you must be straight.
Those are the rules.
It's like, well, what if I still find other people attractive? Even though we are in a monogamous relationship, it doesn't change the fact that I am still queer. And I, and I was a different person and my own person even before being in this relationship with this person.
And so I love that you said that, because I think that there is so much of a practice of, again, coming back to our own, like, self-responsibility and our own self-sovereignty. Whether we're in a relationship or not, you know? Like, for me, my truth, like, my path was, I was meant to be in this relation with this very masculine man. Which, you know, if you would have told myself, like, even 3 years ago.
Before you moved,
you're going to be in a committed relationship with a very masculine man, I would have been like,
LOL.
Bye. You know, and I resisted it for a long time. I will say that I resisted it. And
Fair.
In the sense of, like, this is not who, you know, like, there's such heteronormative messages. And I and after I'd really claimed my queerness, there was almost this coming back to really being in connection with what is true for me. And thing that I find so beautiful about being a queer person, being attracted to all genders, and still being in relationship with that, like, knowing that is, like, a very living, breathing part of me, that it will continue to evolve, that even as I come into a relationship with a man, it's I'm choosing that. Not my conditioning. Which has been so true in the past. I'm supposed to just, like, men or cis men, because you know, I've gotten messages indirectly or directly that liking, loving, being romantically or sexually attracted to anyone other than a cis man was not okay. So
wasn't gonna give you happiness, it wasn't gonna give you fulfillment.
So the beautiful thing that I find about this relationship is that I chose it. You know, and it wasn't something that was just out of conditioning.
Well, and clearly he can't just be your average, typical, heterosexual, masculine, toxic man if, you know, coming to you, because, like, you would, I don't think you would be attracted to that.
100%.
So it's also like the person too, but we also get so hyper-focused on, like, oh, you're with a guy and you're a girl, so you're straight. It's just like, this is a very loving, gentle man. And it was everything that I could have wanted in a partner. But I... maybe having looked at him and not knowing him, I was like, absolutely not. I know you're not what I want. But then, you know, you get to know someone and, you know, most men are trash. But there are a large amount of them who are beautiful and great and kind and accepting and supportive.
And in ongoing relationships.
Probably queer too. Who knows?
100%. 100%. And, you know, men, cis men who are... in ongoing relationship with their own proximity to power and privilege, you know, like, that was like, you know, like, to me, that was so important. Like, you're in ongoing relationship with it. You are aware of it. Like, you are in practice of knowing how this shows up and how that negatively impacts our relationship or others and creates harm. And if you're in ongoing curious relationship with that, and you can still show up with me in, like, presence and compassion and, like, unconditional love, like,
and loving you for who you loving are, which is a queer woman.
He's not afraid, you know, he's not afraid of it. And that that was also so important, regardless of any relationship that I was in.
Yeah.
It was like, I wanted to be able to be my full self. And I wanted room for me to keep becoming my full self, because there's a powerful woman within me.
Yes.
Right? There's so much power
within. I already see her. Right? There's probably so much more to come.
Right? Yeah, thank you. Yes. And, you know, and so being in relationships that are, you know, friendships and,
yes,
you know,
they don't
all, not just
who you are. They uplift you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or not even like uplift, but they are there. They support you.
Yes.
They, if you are up here one day or down here, it's finding that just support and love.
Yeah. And they're not afraid of your full range.
Right.
Either. That's really powerful.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that with your partner, because I've seen that with a few other people, and I just thought it was so funny when I saw that happen on social media, and it was like, oh, well, what's the point of you coming out as bisexual if you're already married to a man and you're a woman? It's just like...
Yeah. Yeah.
You just don't want, you don't want this person to fully express herself. It's not like they're like, oh, this means I'm dating again. It's just like, hey, I am married. We are monogamous. Well, I didn't even know their story with that, but it's just...
Yeah.
That doesn't mean like this part of me needs to be pushed down and repressed because I'm with a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you're speaking exactly to like the erasure of just like women, people directly impacted by misogyny when they are in partnership, relationship, marriage with a cis man.
Right.
Like the conditioning is that, you know, like, you know, I would take his name in marriage, you know, like my identity.
Yeah.
And again, not that there's anything inherently wrong with these pieces, but if they're coming from a place of rejecting or erasing a part of you.
Yes.
That's where I would get really curious around what parts are you stifling, as you've said, rejected, exiled, erased in order to keep the peace or not rock the boat. Within your romantic relationship or any other relationship.
Yeah.
And to me, that is like, that's such a big part in being able to claim your queerness.
Right.
You know, across all relationships, you're not stifling or erasing a part of you just because of your relationships.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, because so I have, excuse me, because I have been recently coming into my own queerness and being queer and like fully like leaning into the label of being asexual, also demisexual as well, which I inherently think a lot of people honestly are, especially today when, and especially with women who are like, no, I'm not going to sleep with you on the first date. We're not going to do this whole song and dance. Like you will have more access to me if I feel a certain way and there is reciprocation. It's not just the whole using me for my body or whatever to help you or ego or whatnot.
Yeah, no, we're done with that.
Done with that. But I thought for so long, because I've only ever been in one relationship and it was with a guy and it was for like less than a year. But I never really fully allowed myself to explore other options. I kept thinking like, oh, I just wasn't into relationships, but I was still quote unquote straight. And then learning more about being asexual, it was just like, you don't have sexual attraction to any gender. And it's not just a one certain thing. It's not a one-off thing. It's not one group of people. And it kind of felt like my entire life I was queer, and I totally was, but I didn't allow myself to like, it was the whole, it's the conditioning. It was like, no, you're not a relationship person, but you're still straight, fully straight. And it's like, oh no. And now that I'm like, I've come to this place and I'm doing the podcast and I'm talking more about this and meeting other people who are queer, it's like, no, this is who I always was.
Yeah.
I just never allowed myself to explore that.
Yeah.
You know, and it, the conditioning and you need to be a woman. And
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, of course.
And like, yes, I feel that, and I feel how powerful it is to actually, it's like you take the blinders off.
Blinders,
it's like
off.
Your field of vision, literally and figuratively, like, just expands.
Yeah. And it all like makes sense. Like, cause it was like for me, it was the knowing of like, oh, this is always who I've been. I never allowed myself to give myself not like labels are everything, but it has helped me so much.
Yes, absolutely.
Dive back into like me and, you know, how I operate as a woman and a queer person and an asexual as a boudoir photographer. And it was really cool. It's like to feel like, oh, this was always within me, but I never allowed myself to explore what all of these other things were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love this part of you. This part of you is so welcome and so needed.
Thank you.
Yes. And I'm celebrating you in this part that's emerging.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here and offering your lens of everything as well. It's so important. And we're, you know, it is still the taboo group of people who are queer, people who are LGBTQI+. It's,
yes,
and especially in this, it's getting worse and worse out there. I mean, I am just terrified that Trump is going to come back into office, and even him not being in office, the hate crimes and the violence against people of color, I feel like it's just getting more and more, and it's like, it's so terrifying to think, but
and I think this is why creating spaces like this, like the space to be, to share in solidarity on podcasts, to be in queer community or relationships where communities where that part of you is safe,
right,
where you feel safe, seen, soothed, secure, to let that part be expressed, that part of you emerge. So just really honoring that part of holding that fear and holding, you know, this systemic cultural oppression, you know, part of the reclamation and the healing comes from creating these spaces, right? It's like, you know, like lighting a candle, like lighting the flame here and just like holding this flame even amidst all of these other threats. We're going to hold this space, even if it's just like a small dose of like safety, a small dose of like presence where you can be queer, you can be your full self. You don't have to be a certain way or any other way than who you are.
Yeah.
And know that even small dosing can resource us, even as these other threats are very real
and be seemingly feel louder and louder and more present too. Yeah.
And I think, you know, people, you know, like you and me as white bodied, you know, cis women, but also I can speak for myself too, as somebody who does have, you know, passes as a straight person because of the relationship that
you're currently in.
Yes. Yeah. I understand that I have greater proximity to power and privilege, that walking down, you know, I'm also very femme presenting. I have long hair. I wear, you know, makeup, you know, and that my gender identity expression, you know, fluctuates. But in general, I can be read as, you know, straight, cis straight woman. Very femme. And so I also recognize that even as a queer person and knowing that is a vital, important, huge part of who I am, I also have access to power and privilege, which is a responsibility on my part to use that proximity to uplift and create as many opportunities for resourcing and safeness for more marginalized identities, for folks who are at greater risk for being harmed or targeted for violence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or just even being in a space to encourage those who are also white to make different decisions and changes in their life that are more focused on not just them and their people, you know, like the support and safety of everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we'll probably wrap up here. I can't believe how long we've been chatting for.
It's been so good. So rich.
I do have one more question.
Yes.
So for, so what are some ways that people who are listening right now, and maybe even for you too, especially for being queer and identifying that way, what are some practices that you like to do to further, I mean, I know nature is huge for you.
Yeah.
But are there some other things, like maybe for people who are listening, that they can kind of tap into a little bit more of their sexuality, whatever that may be, even if they're straight, but like whatever that sensuality is that they hold in the sexuality, what are some practices that you can like, that have worked for you, you see maybe work for others, like your clients, or especially for people who are queer, and maybe even if you have it, like especially for people who don't have that high of a sex drive, like what are some of these like little things that people can be doing? And of course we know it's like listening to within and everything, and but I want to hear if you have any sort of little tidbits, and then we'll close it out. This has been we've been recording for a long time. I love this.
It's so good. Yeah, your questions are so good. This face feels so good.
Oh good, I'm so glad.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, one thing I can say when I think about sexuality, I think about it as an erotic force, as a creative force, as part of our life force.
Yeah.
And we get to express it in any way that we desire because it's ours.
Right.
It is ours. And so when I think about like the practices of like coming into deeper relationship with your sexuality, the first piece is really understanding that it's yours and it's for no one else's.
Right.
You know, like it is for you.
Yeah.
And so if we can understand it as like this really powerful life force, creative energy that we get to channel and move through our bodies, through our the way we dress, or through the way that we move, or through the way that we sound and express, that is so powerful.
Yeah.
So I would say some of the most important practices, I mean, one, I love being in nature. I love connecting to a felt sense of pleasure and joy in the natural world.
Yeah.
So even like connecting with the areas of our bodies that have the most nerve endings, right? Generally our hands, our fingertips, like connecting your hands to the earth, to the trees, and just noticing what it's like. What is the sensation?
Right.
What images, what experiences do you notice by coming into tactile relationship? Movement, right? Moving your body. And it sounds so simple, but I think there's something really powerful, you know, especially when we are bumping up against shame or sadness or grief around not being able to express the full range of who we are because of dominant culture.
Right.
Right? Like a little bit of what you were saying. It's just like, this has been me all along.
Right.
You know, and there's so, like, there's, you know, and I don't want to, you know, imprint my narrative of your experience, but I think in general there can be so much grief and sadness and shame that can emerge from all of those lost, rejected, you know, isolated years.
Yep.
And so there is something really powerful around being with that grief or that shame or that sadness, noticing it in your body and moving. How does shame want to move through my body? How does grief want to move through my body? And that I actually feel like is such a portal to our own power and our own sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, there can be these moments where I, you know, the natural world is my altar, but I also have so many altars in my home where I can kneel and I can bawl, I can go to weep, I can go to expressing these emotions.
Yeah.
And often what can emerge is this really like pleasurable experience of like, what is it like to let myself cry and weep and moan? And like the moans of shame, they sound very similar to the moans of pleasure, and they start to morph into this, you know. So it's kind of like accessing our pleasure, accessing our life force, accessing our sexuality, even through some of these like shadowy parts of ourselves.
That's really beautiful. What just came up for me is I think a lot of us have this notion, an idea of what sexuality is. It's purely sex-based pleasure from here, which that's a big part of it. But like you were saying,
you have a full body.
Exactly. You can experience things from your fingertips, grounding your feet to the earth.
Yeah.
And I think, and maybe why I was so turned off about, like, oh, I'm just not the type of person who, like, is into sex. It's like, I didn't realize that there is this other, it's not just vagina pleasure, pussy pleasure. It's not, like, so genital pleasure. It's so much more.
I love this.
And maybe I was always so, like, not ashamed of, like, me or what I have, but I never felt the, you know, the asexuality, it just rings so true to me these days. But I think not knowing earlier that, you know, I was thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me. But it's like, no, there's a vastness for you. And sexuality is not just one thing. It's not just genital pleasure. It's so many other things.
It's so, like, yes. It's so, like, it's so much more. 100%. Yeah. And so, you know, also just to add on to that question, you know, if the listener is like, give yourself permission to be turned on or even just feel pleasure or erotic delight in the natural world, connecting your hand to that water, you know, like you said, feeling your feet on the earth, you know, like laying your body down, like a full front soft animal of your body on the ground. Give yourself permission for that to be your sexual expression, for that to feel good, for that to be your pleasure.
I love that. I was even just thinking, like, when you're doing your skincare routine, like, connecting and, like, just sending love to you and your skin and your body and your vessel. It's,
it's so good.
I think my biggest takeaway from this episode is you get to decide. You get to decide your sexuality. You get to decide what sensuality is for you. And you can heal the past. You can heal, you know, the ancestral trauma starts and begins with you. And if you heal your body and you do it in a way that it feels aligned to you and not what dominant culture expects you to do, what heterosexuality and the patriarchy expect you to do, it's just kind of, it's all centered around you and your feeling. And I love that. Oh my God. Thank you so much for just this, all of this, but like, the perspective of sexuality and sensuality. And it's not just a linear thing.
Oh, thank you so much for that reflection and just your space holding and helping to draw forth, you know, the messages and the information that wanted to come through today.
Thank you. This was, oh my gosh, this was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No, this was an honor. This was so incredible. Okay, so we'll wrap up here, but let people know your Instagram handle, website. Let's shout out your coach again, your mentor. I will make sure to write that in the show notes as well. Her and then your information as well. But you can kind of do a little sign off where people can find you if they want to seek you out for their own healing.
Oh my gosh. Yes, please. I would love that. You can find me on all the socials. I'm on Instagram at Lindsay_Dickus. I'm on TikTok at Lindsay Dickus. I'm on Facebook. I also have a website, lindsaydickus.com, and you can see the magical, amazing photos that Kendra took last summer.
I need to check out your website.
They look so good.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh. I was like, yes, this one really captured me in my element and my essence. So that's really beautiful. And I have a newsletter that I send out called the Mystic Moon E-Letter. So you can go ahead and sign up for that on my website. I really muse on the intersections of embodiment, attachment, nervous system work, spirituality, sensuality, sexuality, all through an intersectional queer lens. I have two programs right now. I have one-on-one coaching and a group coaching program that you can find out on my website. And and I definitely would recommend following and working with, learning from Dr. Rocio Rosales Mesa. She's on Instagram at, I think, Dr. Rosales Mesa.
Okay, where's she based?
I don't know where she's based. She might be in California.
Okay.
Yeah. But just like really, really powerful force. And also a lot of the anti-racism work too. I've learned from Resmaa Menakem as well in his book, My Grandmother's Hands. And the last piece too, Adrienne Marie Brown, who wrote Pleasure Activism. She's also on Instagram at Adrienne Marie Brown. So those have really been three folks, mentors who have, you know, leaders in the field who I really have oriented towards when coming up against my own being in right relationship with the decolonial movement and being a white body person doing embodiment work.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
you,
Kendra.
This was wonderful.
Yeah, thank
you so
much.
So good chatting with you.
Yay!
Thank you all again for being here. It was such a great episode, and I just wanted to acknowledge that Lindsay and I recorded together in my apartment, which is on the Nooksack Tribe and Lummi Nation territory. So I just wanted to acknowledge that, and thank you for being here, and we'll see you at the next one.